So today we are reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 11, Chapter 6, the Yadu dynasty retires to Prabhas, text number 32. Sri Shuka Uvacha.
Sri Shuka
Uvacha.
Iti Yukto Lokanathena.
Svayambhu Pranipatyatam. Taha Deva Ganaya Devaha Svadham Samapadyata. Shri Shuka Uvacha. Shukdev Goswami said, Iti, thus, Uktaha, being addressed, Loka Nathena, by the Lord of the Universe, Shri Krishna, Svayambhu, Self-born Brahma, Pranipatya, falling down to offer obeisances, Tam, unto him, Saha, along with, Devaganai, all the different demigods, Devaha, the great Lord Brahma, Svadham, to his personal abode, Samapadyata, return. Translation by the servants of His Divine Grace, Srila A.C. Bhaktivinoda Swami Prabhupada. Sri Shukdev Goswami said, thus addressed by the Lord of the Universe, the self-born Brahma fell down in obeisances at the lotus feet of the Lord. Surrounded by all the demigods, the great Brahma then returned to his personal abode. This verse doesn't have a purport, so I'll just read till text 35. Text 33. Thereafter the personality of Godhead observed that tremendous disturbances were taking place in the holy city of Dwaraka. Thus the Lord spoke to the assembled senior members of the Yadu dynasty as follows. Purport. Muni vas nivase kim ghate tarishta darshanam. There is no possibility of actual disturbances or inauspicious events in holy places inhabited by saintly persons. Thus the so-called disturbances in Dwaraka were directly enacted by the personality of Godhead for his own auspicious purpose. Text 34. The Supreme Personality of Godhead said, our dynasty has been cursed by the Brahmanas. Such a curse is impossible to counteract, and thus great disturbances are appearing everywhere around us. Text 35. My dear respected elders, we must not remain any longer in this place if we wish to keep our lives intact. Let us go this very day to the most pious place, Prabhas. We have no time to delay. Purport. Many demigods coming to the earth to assist Lord Krishna in his pastimes took birth within the Yadu dynasty and appeared as Lord Krishna's associates. When the Lord had completed his earthly pastimes, he wanted to send these demigods back to their previous service in universal administration. Each demigod was to return to his respective planet. The transcendental deity of city of Dwaraka is so auspicious that whoever dies there immediately goes back home, back to Godhead. But because the demigod members of the Yadu dynasty, in many cases, were not yet prepared to go back to Godhead, they had to die outside the city of Dwaraka. Thus Lord Krishna, pretending to be an ordinary living being, said, we are all in danger. Let us all immediately go to Prabhas. In this way, by his yoga maya, Krishna bewildered such demigod members of the Yadu dynasty and led them away to the holy place, Prabhas. Since Dwaraka is Parama Mangala, the most auspicious place, not even an imitation of inauspiciousness can take place there. Actually, Lord Krishna's pastime of removing the Yadu dynasty is ultimately auspicious, but since it outwardly appeared inauspicious, it could not take place in Dwaraka. Therefore, Lord Krishna led the Yadus away from Dwaraka. After having sent the demigods back to their planets, Lord Krishna planned to return to the spiritual world, Vaikuntha, in his original form and remain in the eternal city of Dwaraka. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur has made the following important comments on this verse. Prabhas is a famous holy place located near the Viraval railway station within the region of Junagadh. In chapter 30 of the 11th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, it is written that after hearing the words of Sri Krishna, the Yadavas went to the mainland from the island city of Dwaraka by means of boats and then travelled to Prabhas in chariots. At Prabhas Kshetra, they drank a beverage called Maireya and became engaged in a mutual quarrel. A great battle ensued and killing each other with hard stalks of cane. The members of the Yadu dynasty acted out a pastime of their own annihilation. Lord Shri Krishna, manifesting his forearm form, sat down under a pipala tree, placing his left foot, the heel of which was colored red like the red Kokanada lotus, upon his right thigh. A hunter named Jara, watching from the shore of the ocean of Prabhas, mistook the Lord's red colored foot to be the face of a deer and shot his arrow at it. At the base of that same pipala tree, under which Lord Krishna had sat, there is now a temple. 1 mile away from that, from the tree, on the seashore, is the Veera Prabhagna Mutt, and it is said that from this point, the hunter Jara fired his arrow. In the conclusion of his work, Mahabharata Tatparya Nirnaya, Sri Madhvacharya Pad has written the following purport to the Maushala Leela. The Supreme Personality of Godhead, in order to bewilder the demons and ensure that the word of his own devotees and of the Brahmins be maintained, created a body of material energy into which the arrow was shot. But the Lord's actual forearm form was never touched by the arrow of Jara, who is actually the Lord's devotee, Bhrigu Rishi. In a previous age, Bhrigu Muni had placed his foot on the chest of Lord Vishnu. In order to counteract the offense of improperly placing his foot on the Lord's chest, Bhrigu had to take birth as a degraded hunter. But even though a great devotee willingly accepts such a low birth, the personality of Godhead cannot tolerate seeing his devotee in such a fallen condition. Thus, the personality of Godhead arranged that at the end of the Dwapara Yuga, when the Lord was winding up his manifest pastimes, his devotee Bhrigu, in the form of the hunter Jara, would cast the arrow into a material body created by the Lord's illusory energy. Thus, the hunter would become remorseful, gain release from his degraded birth, and go back to Vaikuntha Loka. Therefore, to please his devotee Bhrigu and to confuse the demons, the Supreme Lord manifested his Maushala Leela at Prabhas. But it should be understood that this is an illusory pastime. The personality of Godhead, Lord Krishna, from his very appearance on the earth, did not manifest any of the material qualities of ordinary human beings. The Lord did not appear from the womb of his mother. Rather, by his inconceivable power, he descended into the maternity room. At the time of his giving up this mortal world, he similarly manifested an illusory situation for the sake of bewildering the demons. To bewilder the non-devotees, the Lord created an illusory body out of his material energy, while simultaneously remaining personally in his own Satchidananda body, and thus he manifested the downfall of an illusory material form. This pretense effectively bewilders foolish demons. But Lord Shri Krishna's actual transcendental eternal body of bliss never experiences death. Also at Prabhas Kshetra there is a holy place known as Bhrigu Tirtha, which was manifested by Lord Parshuram. The place at which the two rivers Saraswati and Hiranya flow together into the ocean is named Bhrigu Tirtha, and there the hunter cast his arrow. There is an elaborate description of Prabhas Tirtha in the Prabhas Khanda of the Skanda Purana. There are also many Falashrutis given within the Mahabharata in connection with Prabhas Tirtha. Falashrutis are scriptural statements that promise various auspicious results for one who performs a particular pious activity. In the following verses, the Lord Himself will explain the particular benefits to be derived from visiting Prabhas Kshetra and performing religious activities there. Om Agyanati Mirangasya Agyanindina Shilakya Chakshurunudra Mena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Ukham Karoti Vajram Pankum Dangayati Gurim Yat Kripahatam Mahavande Shri Guru Dhinatarinam Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya, Prabhu Nityananda, Shri Advaita Gadada, Shri Vasari Gaur Bhakta Vrinda. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. So, this chapter is entitled The Yadu Dynasty Retires to Prabhas. So in the beginning of the 11th canto, the first chapter was a curse upon the Yadu Dynasty. So from the 11th canto onwards, we can see that Krishna has started to wind up his pastimes on the earthly planet. And so in the first chapter, in the first and the sixth chapters is the Maushala Leela. And from chapter 2 to 5 is when the conversation is described between Maharaj Nimi and the Nava Yogendras. And then from the next chapter, chapter 7 onwards till chapter 29, is a discussion between Uddhava and Krishna, in which Uddhava was feeling separation from Krishna and he is asking if he could go back with him. And then Krishna speaks the Uddhava Gita. And then in the last chapter, chapter 30, we'll see again the Maushala Leela, how the Yadu dynasty annihilates itself. So in this verse we got a glimpse of it, of what will actually happen, like how it will happen. And also in the first chapter it's described a little bit. So here we this verse describes, the purport was describing that how the Lord actually disappears, how he appears and disappears, and how actually the arrow shot by Jara didn't even touch him, it was his illusory form. So, you know, if we go at the beginning of the 10th canto, you know, we can see that here, you know, actually just before, few verses before, the demigods, they glorified Krishna. The demigods headed by Lord Brahma with his four sons, the Kumaras, and so many of his associates, powerful rishis, they all came to Dwarka. Lord Shiva came with the hobgoblins and the ghosts, and then Indra with the Apsaras, Kinnaras, Gandharvas and his whole assembly, they came to Dwarka and they garlanded Krishna with flowers from the Nandana gardens, the heavenly planets. And they offered beautiful prayers, glorified Krishna. And then Lord Brahma, he spoke. And he said, as we had requested, you have fulfilled our request of reducing the burden of the earth, of getting rid of the burden of the earth. And then actually, you know, here it's very interesting. And he said, we requested you to remove the burden on the earth, or unlimited personality you bought it. That request has been certainly fulfilled. So here Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, he gives an insight. He says that, you know, Lord Krishna might have said to the demigods that you didn't request me, you requested to Shiradukshaya Vishnu. I'm this Govinda, you know. I give pleasure to the, I'm the master of the senses. And I give pleasure to the cows. So, you know, I've got nothing to do with this. But Lord Brahma says, oh, unlimited personality. In other words, Lord Brahma recognizes Krishna to be the source of all incarnations. As Bhagavatam says, Ete tamsa kalapamsa, Krishna stu bhagavan swayam, indrari vyakulam lokam, mridayantu yuga yuga. That all the incarnations listed before are but expansions of the plenary portions of the portions. So, and Krishna is the fountainhead of all incarnations. So, Lord Brahma knows that. So, that's why he says like this. That's why the word is mentioned, oh, unlimited personality of God. So, we see in the beginning of the 10th canto, Lord Brahma approached Lord Vishnu. And why did he approach? Because Bhumi Devi, she assumed the form of a cow. She assumed the shape of a cow. Because she was burdened by many impious kings, or many kings, there were many demons who were dressed up in the royal order as kings, and they were creating so many problems. So the personality of the earth, Bhumi Devi, she was very distressed. And so we can understand that any of the planetary leaders, they can approach Lord Brahma if there are some problems, you know, universal problems. So she approached Lord Brahma and she was crying to invoke his compassion. So naturally when somebody is crying, you know, we are very compassionate to that person. If somebody approaches you while you're crying, you'll take a lot of compassion. So, and then she told Lord Brahma the situation on the planet Earth. And then
Lord Brahma was also very much bereaved. So then with Lord Shiva, and they all went to the milk ocean on the island Shvetadip. It's interesting that they cannot see Lord Vishnu over there directly. They have to stand at the shore of the milk ocean. And then they offered the Purusha Shukta prayers. And it's understood that whenever Brahma offered the Purusha Shukta prayers. And it's understood that they offer this certain prayer whenever they have to approach Vishnu. This is a standard mantra they say. It's like some, you have some standard mantras, like offering or like that. So to see the Lord, they offer the Purusha Shukta prayers, but nothing happened. So then Lord Brahma, he got a transmission from Shirodakshaya Vishnu. And it's called Shirodakshaya Vishnu because on that planet, the ocean is made up of, it's the milk ocean. That's why Vishnu is called Shirodakshaya Vishnu. So then he got a transmission through the heart. Because as Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, evam parampara praptam imam rajashri vidu sa kale neha mata yoga nashta parantapa. Thus this ancient science of the relation, ancient science of yoga, of the relationship of the jiva to me, is told by me to you, like that. So it comes in the disciplic succession, this parampara. So it was spoken to Brahma, Adi Brahma Kavai. So Brahma got this a message from Vishnu through the heart. And then, so Brahma then told this message to all the demigods and Bhumi Devi, which was that Shirodakshaya Vishnu said that, you know, Lord Krishna will appear in the Yadu dynasty. And all of you demigods should take birth in the families of the Yadu dynasty to assist in Krishna's pastimes. So he spoke in very sweet words and then pacified Bhumi, and then he returned to his own abode. And then we see that actually Lord Krishna did appear. He did take birth in the prison cell of Kamsa. So, you know, sometimes you tell people that, you know, many people, unfortunately, they think that Krishna took birth and then Krishna died. You know, especially if you're preaching, then you many times people will come up with this argument that actually Krishna died. You know, this hunter Jara, he shot an arrow and, you know, it's crashed him and Krishna died. So he can't be God. He's just like a person like us. He quit his body. And Krishna also took birth. They said, you know, he took birth from Devaki in the prison cell of Kamsa, and he was a baby, then he grew up. So what is the difference between Krishna and us? You know. And so in order to understand Krishna's pastimes, we need to understand Krishna. We need to understand Krishna's form. That's why, Krishna gave us this Bhagavad Gita, in which Krishna describes everything about himself very nicely. So we also see, like, Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita 4.8, Sorry, 4.6. Krishna says, Ajopi san avyayatma. Bhutanam ishvaro api san prakritim svam adhishthaya sambhavami atma maya. So, we see that. So, we can see the difference between our birth and Krishna's so-called birth. Or our descent and Krishna's descent. You know, when we take birth, in Bhagavatam says, Karmana daiva netrina. Karmana means by fruitive work. And daiva netrina means by the supervision of the Lord. So when we take birth, you know, according to our work and desires, and according to the laws of nature, we are given a certain body. It is not that we chose a body, you know, that just before birth, we opened up a catalogue of different parents in different countries. or looked at the different types of bodies. Okay, I'll choose this one. This body is good, you know, this one is more beautiful, or this is strong, or I want a very scholarly body. No, it wasn't like this, you know. We were actually put into the womb. We were forced by the laws of nature. And our birth wasn't a very pleasant experience. As Bhagavatam tells us, and even today, even modern medical science can tell us, maybe they think it's pleasurable, but as per Bhagavatam, it is not a very pleasurable situation in the womb. It's a very, very torturous situation. You know, 9 months in the womb, bent like a bow. And so it's not a very pleasurable situation. So, and we are forced to take birth. Whereas with Krishna, and also Bhagavad Gita says, what's that verse? Na hanyate hanye manishri. How does it start? Na jayate mriyate va kadachin, nayam bhutva bhavita na bhuyaha. Ajosh Nitya Shashvataya Yamna Purana Nahanyate Hanne Manishvide. Krishna says that for the soul there is neither birth nor death. He has not come into being, does not come into being, and will not come into being. He is eternal, primeval, unborn, and ever existing. So we see, you know, this is in common with us and Krishna. Here in this verse also it says Ajopi San. Aja means unborn. So here Krishna is saying, although I'm unborn and eternal, so, you know, even we are unborn, you know, we are Aja, and Krishna is also unborn, ever existing, primeval. We always existed, Krishna also always existed. And we are eternal. For the soul, there's neither birth nor death. For Krishna also, there's no birth nor death. But the difference is, na hanyate hanye mane sharire. You know, the soul is not slain when the body is slain. And here it says, Jobisan Avya Atma. Avya means without deterioration. Atma means body. So in Krishna's body, there is no deterioration. Whereas in our body, there is na hanyate hanye mane sharire. For our body just destroys by the force of time. So we can all see, like Krishna says, the moment you take birth, you have to die. So, for the body, there is birth and death. But we see Krishna's body, our intelligence also deteriorates. And our body, our senses deteriorate. Whereas with Krishna, and in the Bhagavatam we saw that Krishna lived for 125 autumns. But it appears that Krishna is taking birth. It appears like that. Because, you know, Krishna came like a baby. Krishna appeared as a baby. But the amazing thing is that Krishna doesn't age beyond a certain point. So, you know, like Krishna appeared in the prison cell of Kamsa like a baby. But the amazing thing is Krishna didn't take birth like us. Krishna first came in the heart of Vasudev. Then from Vasudev he was transferred to Devaki. Then, you know, Devaki was so effulgent and you know, Kamsa saw this and he was astonished. And then Krishna appeared. But Krishna didn't appear through the womb. And Krishna appeared like a baby form with a helmet, with golden earrings. You know, we don't see, you know, us taking birth like that. You know, we come out crying. But then Krishna assumed this forearm form of Vishnu to prove that he's actually God. And to inform Vasudeva and Devaki that he has fulfilled their promise. So that's how Krishna, you know, appeared. But then Krishna grew up and he performed so many pastimes. And at this point of time, you know, 125 autumns have passed. In other words, he's 125 years old, but Krishna still looks like a youth. He hasn't aged beyond 16 or 20. If we look at all the pictures here, they're all, you don't see Krishna as an old man, you know. Sometimes some people have a conception of God as an old man with a stick, you know, walking. Or because he's so old, you know, that's why everything is out of order in this world. That's why there's so many disasters, because he has gone old and he doesn't know what's happening in the creation. he can't handle it anymore. But it's not like that. Krishna is ever youthful, nava yovanam. And here Krishna says, although I'm unborn and my transcendental body never deteriorates, and although I'm the Lord of all living entities. And another reason for Krishna's appearance is that he appears out of his mercy. You know, Krishna appears out of his mercy and he comes in his original Shyamasundara form, you know, two-handed form playing the flute. This is so that we don't speculate about him. You know, if Krishna didn't appear in his original form, then how would we know how he looks like? So, Krishna, out of his kindness and mercy for us, and to smash the conceptions of the impersonalist, he appears in his original two-handed form, so that there's no room for mental speculation. But the living entities are so obstinate that they still speculate about Krishna. Though it is so clear, it is so clearly evident how Krishna appears. We just have to read the authorized scriptures. And also it says that Krishna appears by his internal potency. You know, when we appear, as I said, we appear by the external potency. That's why Krishna is above the laws of nature. Because when Krishna appears, he appears through his internal potency. And all his activities are in his internal potency, which is not touched by the external potency. So that's why for Krishna's activities, there's no reaction. Because it's on the transcendental plane. And here Krishna says that I am the Lord of all living entities. You know, whereas we are not the Lord of all living entities. We think we are, but we are not. We struggle to be. But, you know, why is Krishna the Lord of all living entities? Because he performs so many wonderful activities and superhuman pastimes. So when Krishna appeared, by his yoga maya potency, he bewildered all the gatekeepers in the prison cell. And all the doors opened, and then he was taken to Vrindavan. And there, you know, he killed the card demon, killed Putana, killed Trinavarta, Pakasura, Agasura, so many demons, you know. And then, you can read the Krishna book chapter after chapter. Krishna performs his, displays his activities. He acts like an ordinary person, but at the same time, he shows that he's not an ordinary person, that he is the personality of Godhead. He exhibits his prowess by displaying these pastimes. So this is about our descent and Krishna's descent. Then the question arises that when does he descend, or when does he appear? And his appearance is, Krishna says, I appear in every millennium. So his appearance is just like the appearance and disappearance of the sun. You know, it's not that if the sun appears, that it wasn't existing before. The sun was always existing. So it appears, it is in front of us for some time, it is manifest for some time. Then again it disappears, it sits. But that doesn't mean the sun has, you know, ceased to exist. The sun is always existing. So Krishna and his associates and his pastimes are like that. So we can understand about this Maushala Leela also, that when this Maushala Leela is taking place, it is simply disappearing from this planet, you know. And it will be manifest in another place. And these Leelas, they go on eternally. So, and also, you know, Arjun asked this question to Krishna. You know, Krishna told Arjun that I spoke this knowledge to the sun god Vivasvan. So Arjun asked, how is it that you spoke this to the sun god Vivasvan? You know, the Vivasvan is senior by birth to you, he's elder. And whereas you are of my age, you know, we are contemporaries. So then Krishna says, you know, many, many births, what's the verse? Many, many births both you and me have taken, but I remember all of them, whereas you cannot. In other words, because Krishna's body is transcendental, he can remember everything. Whereas with us, because of the change of bodies, we forget. Because our body is always changing, so that's why we forget. That's why we forget our past lives. That's why we forget even what activities we have done in this life. If I ask you what you have done 1 year ago this time, maybe you might tell you were in Bhagavatam class, but if say if I ask you what did you do at 10 o'clock 1 year ago, we can't tell. But whereas with Krishna, he, because he's the Supreme Personality of Godhead and his body is not different from his soul, it's spiritual, so he remembers everything. So, and then Krishna tells when he appears. So Krishna says, yada yada hi dharmasya glani bhavati bharata abhyuthanami dharmasya tadatmanam shijamiyam. So Krishna says, yada yada hi dharmasya, whenever and wherever there is a decline in religious practice. So in this verse the word srijami is very significant, because srijami can be taken as creation, that Krishna's body was created. But just in the previous verse in 4.6, Krishna says, I'm avyayatma, you know, my body does not deteriorate. So Krishna's body, so the word srijami doesn't, the creation doesn't apply in this context. That's why we have to read these books from acharyas coming in the parampara. Because any ordinary person who translates Bhagavad Gita, he can mislead us. Because he might take the word srijami to be creation, that the Krishna's body was created. But we know that because Prabhupada is coming in the, he's an acharya and he's coming in the parampara, so he can present the knowledge intactly. You know, just because somebody knows Sanskrit, they don't have the qualification to speak on the Gita. You know, Krishna tells Bhagavad Gita, tells Arjun that one has to be his friend and devotee, because he's his friend and devotee is speaking it to him. So that's why Krishna spoke it to Arjun. So the word srijami means manifest. That's why Krishna manifested on. Krishna manifests. He never takes birth. So this confirms it again. And Krishna says, whenever and wherever there is a decline in religious practice. So I appear by my own free will. You know, Krishna is not bound by any laws that, you know, he has to, he can appear anywhere. Why only in India? Sometimes people say, all these, they argue that all, you know, you Hare Krishna, all your incarnations, they just take place in, this is Hinduism, it only takes place in India. But no, Krishna says, whenever and wherever. You know, wherever means anywhere. Krishna can take birth anywhere. He's not restricted. Everything is Krishna's property. So, you know, how can we restrict Krishna to descend anywhere? Because he's the proprietor of everything. And Krishna says, when there is a predominance in religion, in religion, and when true religion disappears, so Krishna manifests. So then, you know, this brings us to the point, what is religion? And Prabhupada mentioned in the purport that religion means the codes of laws given by God. So religion cannot be manufactured by anyone. Just like the state laws cannot be manufactured by a citizen. You know, one cannot say, start driving on the right. You know, there'll be a reaction to that. So similarly, the codes of laws cannot be manufactured by anyone. These days, especially if you're doing book distribution, you come across people who say, you know, I follow my own religion. I've made up my own religion. You know, this is simply foolishness. How can you manufacture your own religion? And, you know, Indians also, they don't say it directly, but in an indirect way, they say the same thing. They don't say it, but they do whatever they want, you know. They make their own, they concoct their own process. So religion cannot be manufactured. So actually, the codes of law are given in the Vedas. And Vedas emanate from the breathing of Vishnu or Krishna. So but what is the purpose of these religious principles? The purpose is to ultimately lead the living entity to complete surrender. So like Bhagavad Gita is also like the codes of laws, but at the end of Bhagavad Gita we see Krishna says, Sarva dharman paritajya maam ekam sharanam vraja aham tvam sarva papibhyo moksha yasami mahasacha. That abandon all varieties of religion and just surrender unto me. So, but we see religion is given
in all kinds of communities, you know, not only in the Vedic civilization, but in all other civilizations also. But so according to different people's capacity to understand, different levels of knowledge is given, or codes of law are given, which the aim is to ultimately bring the living entity to complete surrender. Just like Lord Buddha, he appeared to, because in the name of the Vedas, on the pretext of the Vedas, so many animals were being killed. So Lord Buddha appeared in order to stop that. So he preached non-violence. And the aim is to gradually bring the people to surrender unto Krishna. And then, you know, after Lord Buddha, so many acharyas came, which, you know, Shankaracharya came and he rejected Buddhism, like that, you know, Ramanujacharya, so many acharyas came, and they were establishing the ultimate religious principle, which is surrender unto Krishna, and to develop love for Krishna. So this is when Krishna appears. And why Krishna appears? You know, Krishna says in the next verse, Paritranaya Sadhunam Vinashaya Chadrishkitam Dharma Samsabhanathaya Sambhavami Yuge Yuge. Krishna says, to deliver the pious and to Dharma Samsabhanathaya. To Dharma means religion. To deliver the pious and to annihilate the miscreants, duskritana, miscreants. So you know, Krishna doesn't have to appear to do all these things. Like, Krishna doesn't have to appear to kill the demons. Krishna can do it through his external energy. You know, there's so many tsunamis and bushfires, you know. Krishna can do it like that. He doesn't have to come personally. But the inner reason for Krishna's appearance is actually Krishna wants to satisfy his devotees, because his devotees are in separation from him. So Krishna wants to come and mitigate their separation, because they're suffering and they want to see Krishna face to face. So we see like Vasudev and Mike's gone. So we see like Vasudev and Devaki, you know, they wanted to please Krishna by having him as a son. So his purpose was to, and his primary purpose was like to satisfy them. But, you know, but simultaneously he performs the other activities, like he freed Vasudev, Devaki, he killed Kamsa and did so many other things. And actually Krishna doesn't do that. By through Vishnu he does all these pastimes, killing of the demons. So the other purposes are secondary, but the primary purpose is to please his devotees. And what is the result of understanding Krishna? You know, Krishna says, Janma Karma Chame Divyam Evam Yogati Tatvata. That one who understands my activities and appearance, he will get liberation. Krishna is so merciful that simply, you know, Prabhupada said, even if we theoretically understand this, you know, you'll get liberation even in this life. But if you want to develop love for Krishna, then Krishna says we have to be free from Vita Raga Bhaya Krodha. So Vita means free, from Raga means attachments. So attachment means the bodily conception of life. So at the moment everybody is thinking, I am the body. That's the bodily conception. And based on the body, we have so many attachments. You know, anything in relationship to body. So one has to be freed of Vita Raga. Then Bhaya. Bhaya means fear. These are the obstacles, like in spirit, like fear. Fear means that because of the strong bodily conception of life, and when we identify with that, and when we take this conception to spiritual life also, which means that that I will retain my individuality. You know, if you think like this, that I will that I'm fearful of retaining my individuality, and because we have this bodily conception of life
conception of life in mind, which means we equate the spiritual life to the material conception of life, which means we think that in the spiritual existence also, the individuality means that there will be so much suffering, because in the material conception of life there is so much suffering, you know, there's birth, there's death, there's old age, disease, the threefold miseries. So if we retain this conception, then we have this fear. So this fear is also an obstacle, and due to this fear, it gives rise to impersonalism, and then krodha, bita, raga, bhaya, krodha. Krodha means anger. So anger can arise, like for the scientists, they are speculating for so many years. There are different so many theories and philosophies, but out of hopelessness they cannot reach to any conclusion. So then they get angry, and then they conclude, it's all void out there, there's nothing out there. Or maybe we can conclude, I've been practicing for so much time, but nothing is happening. This process doesn't work. So, Krishna is not there if we don't apply ourselves very properly to the process. It can lead to frustration or anger. And so, it can lead to impersonalism and voidism. But Srila Prabhupada says that by having full faith in Krishna and by following the instructions of the bona fide spiritual master, then one can actually overcome these obstacles and develop love for Krishna. So if we simply try to understand Krishna's activities and pastimes and try to work on these things, then we can actually develop love for Krishna. And all the stages are described, that first one has to have a desire for self-realization, and based on that desire one seeks devotees, then one seeks shelter of a bona fide spiritual master, and then one takes initiation, then one follows the process of devotional service, and then one reaches anartha nivritti, all his attachments are clear. Like then he develops a ruchi, a taste for devotional service, like that, and then bhava, and then prem. So here in this Maushala Leela, which is it's a very interesting pastime, which, from one point of view we can think that that at this point of time that so many demons have been annihilated. The battle of Kurukshetra has taken place, and like Krishna with Lord Balaram, he also appeared to help Krishna in his pastimes, though Krishna has fallen himself. So like Balaram killed many noteworthy demons like Dhenugasura, Dvivida the gorilla, Lukmi, and they killed so many demons, and then Krishna arranged the battle of Kurukshetra. Krishna used the Pandavas as his instruments, and he empowered them to fight the battle of Kurukshetra and kill all these demons like the Kauravas. So in one sense it seems that the burden of the earth is ridden, but Krishna actually, he detected that still the burden of the earth is not fully ridden, because Krishna detected that some of the members of the Yadu dynasty had become proud, that they had become familiar with him. Because we know that in Krishna's pastimes many demigods had appeared, had taken birth, and some of them had become inimical to Krishna because they equated Krishna to be an ordinary human being. Avajananti mamura manushantanum ashritam. That fools deride me as a form. They do not know my transcendental nature as the supreme lord of all that be. So due to when they equate Krishna to be an ordinary human being, so like that familiarity comes in. So, and then Krishna detected their pride. So here, this commentary, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Goswami, he gives his insights on why Krishna did that. So he says, because some of the demigods who had appeared, they had become inimical and proud. So, and due to being born in Krishna's family, because Krishna has inconceivable opulences. So whoever takes birth in Krishna's family, he also has inconceivable opulences and strength. And Krishna thought, when if he leaves this planet and he leaves them behind, they will misuse the opulences. And they will actually trample upon others. So then Krishna decided to get rid of them. And then one can say, okay, then so many of his devoted members were also killed, you know, those who were not inimical to Krishna. But, you know, and it's said that because, so that they can resume their positions and they can assist Krishna in his other pastimes. So Krishna took them away, like that. And also, Srila Bhaktivedanta Saraswati Thakur says that if the whimsical members were not removed, then some foolish people would have thought that this is the will of the Lord. That all there are so many problems on the earth because Krishna wants that. This is the will of the Lord. So Krishna didn't want that. So this is one insight. And Sridhar Swami says that the Lord caused the destruction in his four-armed form, not in his two-armed form, as we read in the purport. And then he also says that if some of the members were inimical, why didn't they oppose the plan of the Lord? But then he says that because Krishna is inconceivable, nobody can know the will of the Lord, not even his family members. We can also see when in Lord Balram didn't know what Lord Krishna was up to, when all the cowherd boys and the cows were actually Vishnu Murtis. But for one complete year he didn't know that who were they. So, you know, if Krishna wants, nobody can know the will of Krishna. Not even his. So Sridhar Swami, he gives that insight. And Srila Jiva Goswami, he says that Krishna's activities and his associates' activities, they're not ordinary activities. And that Krishna and his associates are always eternally situated in different dhams like Mathura dham, Dwarka dham, Vrindavan dham. So they simply appear and they manifest and unmanifest. And because if Krishna leaves them behind, they cannot bear separation from Krishna, his associates. As Sambhava Prabhu was telling us, very nicely describing in his class on Wednesday, that how if the members of the Yadu dynasty, if Krishna leaves them, they will actually they'll suffer from great separation for him. And because they are so powerful, they can trample the whole earth like a tsunami. Prabhu gave the example of a tsunami. How because those plates, they collide and, you know, one comes up, then the tsunami arises. So, because like that, so they can actually trample the whole earth out of separation. Because due to their agitated minds, they can cause so much havoc. So, and Krishna wanted them, you know, to be back with him, so that they cannot experience that separation. And Srila Jiva Goswami says that ultimately the members of the Yadu dynasty are not irreligious. One should not take them to be irreligious. And all the Vaishnava Acharya says that this Leela of the Maushala Leela is actually a great lesson for us. Krishna enacted a great pastime so that he can teach us something, the conditioned souls, that actually that this place is not, this world is not a permanent place, you know, that even if this can happen to Krishna's own family members, you know the family members of Krishna, how exalted they would be. They have all these opulences. If they can fight amongst themselves and everything is gone, so what to speak in our situation? So that just to slacken our bondage from, you know, just slacken our attachment to this world, you know, Krishna enacted this pastime. This shows us how this world is so temporary, and our prime goal is to cultivate Krishna consciousness. And also, again, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur gives another insight that ordinary people after they would hear the adventures of the Yadu dynasty, they'll think that the heroes of the Yadu dynasty are as worshipable as Krishna. In other words, this is the Mayavadi philosophy. They'll think that that those heroes are as good as Krishna, or they are Krishna, you know. But therefore, to establish that the most powerful living entity can never equal or surpass the Supreme Lord, Krishna arranged for their destruction. Because Krishna didn't want, you know, foolish people to think that that any powerful living entity, no matter how powerful they are, they can equal Krishna or surpass Krishna in strength or any of the opulences. So this is one reason also Krishna enacted this pastime. And also, Krishna knew that because Krishna's family members, the Yadu dynasty, because they are Krishna's family members, they have inconceivable strength. And nobody can destroy them from outside. It is said Krishna was in the first chapter of the 11th canto that Krishna is protecting them with his two arms, the Yadu dynasty. So because it is protected by Krishna's arms, nobody can actually destroy it. So Krishna thought it has to be destroyed from within. So even Srila Prabhupada said about ISKCON that it cannot be, ISKCON cannot be destroyed from outside. Only from within, by, if there's no love and cooperation, you know, there is fighting from within, you know, ISKCON can disintegrate. But from without, Maya cannot attack it. It is only from within. So similarly, like that also in this pastime. So that's why Krishna enacted this pastime of the sages headed by Narad cursing the, you know, cursing the young members of the Yadu dynasty, that they will be destroyed by this club. So that's how this pastime took place. So we'll just stop here and see if there are any questions or comments or corrections.
Yes, at one stage you said that fear was impersonal. So can you explain how fear was impersonal?
If one equates the material conception of life to the spiritual life, then it will make one impersonalistic. Because if we think, you know, in this body there's so much suffering and trouble. And if I retain my identity after death, that means I will still have so much suffering. So that's why they want to become impersonal, so that they don't have to suffer. Is that right? Because they retain their bodily conception of life and they think there's so much suffering in this life. So I don't want to suffer like this in my other lives. You know, I don't want to suffer like this in the future. If in the present there's so much suffering, some people realize, not everyone. If they realize they don't want to suffer in the future, so they don't want to retain their identity. They want to become impersonal. Because if they retain their identity, they carry this material conception of life. So they think spiritual life is also like this. There'll be so many problems. That's why I want to become impersonal, so that I can avoid all these difficulties.
Impersonal means they think Krishna is not a person.
And they also, impersonalism also means that I am not a person either. Krishna is not a person, I'm not a person. Sorry? Where does the question of existence comes?
Person existing. Person needed. We will say that I am not existing. My body is dead. Body or
the body is always dead, but the person within, we know the soul. But we know that soul is a person. It is, the soul actually also has a form, but it is very very minute, we cannot conceive of it. But the soul is a person. And after liberation, and the soul actually retains its original identity in relationship to Krishna. So, you know, actually Krishna says that after, for the soul there is never birth. Again, impersonalists are also of two types. There's the Brahmavadis and the Mayavadis. So, you know, the Brahmavadis, they know that Krishna's form is eternal, but they think that his form comes from eternity, knowledge and bliss. So, and they want to merge in the Brahma Jyoti to Krishna's effulgence. So, and where there is no activity, basically it is, you know, hanging out there. But whereas the Mayavadis, they think that Krishna's form is a product of matter, and we will also lose our identity after death. You know, we become void. That's my understanding. If you'd like to comment or correct.
Fear leads to information, the question is not wrong. You are fearful when you are not aware of the Supreme or Krishna. So, in this way, if you don't do this, like if you are not believing in Krishna, then what is believing? This is how it leads to your personality.
Okay, I'll tell you what Prabhupada says. That's the conclusion. So this is about fear in that verse. In the materialistic concept, the body is perishable, full of ignorance and completely miserable. Therefore, people in general keep the same bodily idea in mind when they are informed of the personal form of the Lord. For such materialistic men, the form of the gigantic material manifestation is supreme. Consequently, they consider the supreme to be impersonal. And because they are too materially absorbed, the conception of retaining the personality after liberation from matter frightens them. When they are informed that spiritual life is also individual and personal, they become afraid of becoming persons again, and so they naturally prefer a kind of merging into the impersonal void, because they retain that material conception of life. So they think, you know, spiritual life is also suffering, so I'll merge in the impersonal void. Generally, they compare the living entities to the bubbles of the ocean, which merge into the ocean. That is the highest perfection of spiritual existence, attainable without individual personality. This is a kind of a fearful stage of life, devoid of perfect knowledge or spiritual existence. Furthermore, there are many persons who cannot understand spiritual existence at all. Being embarrassed by so many theories and by contradictions of various types of philosophical speculation, they become disgusted or angry and foolishly conclude there is no supreme cause and that everything is ultimately void. So that is anger. So that's how fear arises.
Krishna is mentioning the Janma Karma Charma Jivya Yoma Miti Tatra Yatva Diham Puna Janma Naiti
Mamiti Swarjana.
So he is saying that whoever knows that my birth and activities are transcendental, divine, does not take another body after giving up this present body. My question is that if we know Krishna, how is it that we don't take another body?
How is it?
Yes.
Because Krishna is very kind. He's very merciful. So he can do anything. If you understand him, you know, he says liberation, freedom from birth and death. This is because actually this is for the jnanis and the yogis. The yogis do so much
so much tapasya to achieve mystic powers, or, you know, and they can be free from birth and death. They meditate, so much hardship, and the jnanis, so much mental speculation, ultimately bahunam vimanam ante, ultimately they come to the conclusion Krishna is the cause of everything. You know, the jnanis, after so much like renunciation, austerity, study of the Vedas, knowledge, that they finally they get liberation. That also Brahma Jyoti and personal liberation. But with Krishna, if you simply understand his activities and appearance, Krishna says, I give you liberation. You know, Krishna is supreme personality of Godhead. He can do anything. It's up to him. He says, I give liberation. So he gives. So we should take up the process more seriously, because it is so easy. We don't have to do all those austerities like the yogis and the jnanis. We just need to understand Krishna. So these books, Bhagavad Gita, Srimad Bhagavatam, Krishna book, you know, these actually describe Krishna's activities and appearance.
The question is that, how is that by knowing the activities of Krishna one does not take the birth?
How is it? Because that's Krishna's system. Krishna says that. Krishna can give liberation, not anyone else. Vishnu can give liberation. So Vishnu can give whenever he wants. He's in control. He can take us out whenever he wants. Kranthrashim Bhagavatam ki jai.